welcome to the Self-Help Podcast, a weekly no-nonsense guide dedicated to your emotional health and well-being. Presented by entrepreneur Edward Lamb and psychotherapist Sean Orford. For more information, visit liveinthepresent.co.uk.
Hello, welcome to episode 191 of the Self-Help Podcast with me, Ed Lamb, and Sean Orford. You all right, Sean?
I'm okay. I'm surviving.
You went to grab your jaw then.
Yeah.
The tooth saga has been sorted now.
Yeah, I had my molar ripped out on Monday, so 4 days ago.
That was it, man. Ouch.
So it hasn't quite sorted itself out yet.
Torture has been in the news a little bit of late.
Yeah, yeah.
Did it work on you? Did you squeal?
It made me understand why torturers focus on teeth and nails.
Yeah.
They're good places to get you going.
Did you squeal like a pig?
No. I was... it's quite interesting because I was lying there being operated on by this lovely guy, Nigel, dentist, and it was a bit of a problem. So it felt like he was trying to drill down to Australia to get the roots of this tooth out. And I'm lying there meditating, focusing on my breath, trying to be calm. Two thoughts in my head. One was about the amount of people I've worked with over the years who suffer constant and continual pain, and I'm thinking, I can deal with this, I have to deal with it all the time. And the second thing I was thinking was, what a stupid design. Why would the creative intelligence, whatever you want to call that, create a situation where a tooth got a nerve in it? Why do you need a nerve in a tooth? What a stupid design. So I think that we need to return to sender and claim our money back on the design.
On the design of our...
our teeth, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good shout. I'm sure evolution has got a few theories on all that.
But So if anybody knows why your tooth should have a nerve in it, please let me know.
Yeah.
What a stupid idea.
We could check online, I guess, but that's too...
Google it. Why does my tooth have a nerve?
This week we're not talking about Sean's teeth endlessly, I promise you.
I think we should.
It's we're talking about cancer, aren't we? Because it's World Cancer Day.
Yeah.
Probably by the time you're reading this, February the 4th, 2017. So we're going to talk about cancer, a few things related to it. I haven't decided on a proper title for the show, but kind of mindfulness and cancer and that kind of thing.
You haven't told us what you have been doing this week.
Well, yeah, if you give me a second...
I'm missing out. I want to know. I'm nosy.
Before I do that, I'd like to mention our website, in case there's anyone new to the show, any new listeners. Welcome to the gang. It's a very exclusive bunch, growing by the day. Livingthepresent.co.uk is our website. If you want to really join the gang, stick your email address in one of the boxes on the site. We'll send you some free meditation files, and we'll also send you weekly alerts as to when these shows come out. Every Thursday morning they go out. I schedule them, which is a nice little routine I've got into on a Wednesday night whilst watching Suits I'm watching at the moment on Netflix.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's alright. Yeah, the missus is well into it. It's good. It's not great. But
I've just googled why do teeth have nerves.
Okay.
And Quora come up with the evolutionary reason for teeth to have nerves is that the nerve is required to make the tooth in the first place. Uh-huh. And they reckon that the nerve starts first, and then the tooth grows around the nerve.
Okay.
I get that's the how it works, but it doesn't explain why anyone would want to stick a nerve in there. There must have been a better way of doing it, surely.
I don't know. Yeah, probably. We'll dive deeper and maybe explain.
No, we'll only go deeper.
Doc, please. A quick mention to 123 Friday. They're our partners on the show. If you have a look at the logo, the 123 Friday logo on our site, click it. You can get a great offer on an app which will help back up all your photos and videos from your phone or your tablet, basically. So you've got to keep them nice and safe. And you're helping the show at the same time. What have I been up to, Sean?
What have you been up to?
Seamless into the not too much. Working hard. Lots going on, man. All the companies I work for are back to it big time this year. I'm just getting my little routine, dropping the boys at school, getting off to work on my bike. Now that I've got this tracker on my wrist, it's quite good. I'm kind of challenging myself to kind of get to work by the most direct route and as quick as I can. So I've found my direct route and I've now got it down. 17 minutes 50 is my record.
So are you enjoying having the tracker on your wrist?
Very much so, yeah. Yeah, it's cool. It's part of me now.
So would you recommend it to people?
Yeah, certainly. Yeah, I mean, I've got the Apple Watch, so it's one of the more expensive trackers. But I think everyone could really benefit from having a Fitbit or one of those kind of things.
Which... So as an Apple Watch, does it have other benefits other than tracking?
It does. Yeah. It's a really nice bit of kit in terms of notifications. And, it tells the time as well, amazingly, which I found quite handy. Weather, calendar, little notifications, even when you're driving along, if you've got the map going on your phone, it'll just buzz on your wrist just to give you that last minute warning that you need to turn off. It's a clever bit of kit, actually. But yeah, so I'm enjoying it, and heart rate and all that as well.
Yeah.
Being in tune with my body a little bit more, which is what we're talking a little bit about today, right?
Mindfully in tune with your body.
We'll be trying to, well, you mentioned the idea of getting Rhea on the show again to talk, because she's a cancer expert.
She works in psychological medicine in cancer, doesn't she?
Yeah, so she knows her stuff.
The last time she came on the show, she threw a cup of water inside her computer. Do you remember?
Yeah, I remember it well. Just up there.
It wasn't just up there.
It wasn't deliberate, we should add. But yeah, it's World Cancer Day, February the 4th. Check out the website, which we'll put in the show notes on our website. But it's worldcancerday.org. So they're doing a lot of work to kind of raise awareness of the disease, really, which for me is quite interesting, because everyone knows about cancer, everyone's heard it, and everyone has been either directly or indirectly affected by it in their family, friends. You don't have to go far, do you, in your family, really, to find someone who's had it. 8 million deaths per year globally, which, to be honest, I didn't sound like... I thought it would be more than that.
We think of cancer with fear, and we hear the big C, but it's something like the fourth most likely thing to kill you.
Yeah, heart disease, top of the list.
Yeah, strokes, all those kinds of stuff. There's lots of stuff that comes before cancer. You wrote a statistic down here, which is the 8 million deaths, but 4 million are premature.
Yeah.
I'm not quite sure what a premature cancer death means.
Well, I can tell you that, because, I'll just swing back to the website. So, yeah, 4 million die premature. That's basically people between the ages of 30 and 69.
Oh, right, okay, so that's what they mean by premature.
Yeah, you're not old, basically. So if you're 69, prepare yourself. You're about to be old next year.
It's weird that I ran a service for the Younger People's Disabled Unit in Manchester, and what that meant was anyone under 65 was a younger person.
Really?
Interesting concept of age.
Yeah. It is, yeah, and I'm 35, and I'm just about, usually in the categories you have to check, put yourself in on a web form.
So are you middle-aged?
I'm not quite. I'm still in
so
that
kind of...
So
where was middle-aged now?
Basically, I think when I turn 36, I think... I'm going to go into that next box. Get it. But yeah, I mean, the premature deaths are important to note, because it actually got raised on Question Time last night that I was watching about the health service in the UK that we're having our usual winter struggles with. Funding issues, and it was talking about, should we start charging people for GP appointments that don't really need to go? People that are in A&E, even, should they, if they're there and they're drunk and they've fallen over, maybe we should charge them? And there were some good points raised by politicians, which usually wouldn't have got applause because they're a politician, but raising sensible things like, for example, if someone is drunk and they've fallen over, okay, they shouldn't have been drunk, but maybe they're drunk for a psychological reason, something else in their life. You know, we can't all of a sudden start ignoring these people's cries for help, can we? And when it comes to cancer or preventable death, if you're starting to pay for a GP appointment, then less people are likely to go to the GP for little niggles, which could
be... But also people won't miss appointments if they're paid for.
Well, that was why they were saying, should we? Because all these people are missing appointments in the crowd. But it's basically saying, yeah, well, if we do that, people are going to miss out on little indicators for things like cancer, and further down the line it's going to cost the nation a lot more in treatment, whereas, you know, get it checked out early. Apparently in the UK we have one of the poorest records in Europe on getting cancer early,
which is why we want to leave Europe.
Well, yeah,
crazy world.
Yeah, let's not go into that.
the thing that we were talking about before we went on air was the idea about we pay a national insurance contribution every week on the money that we earn. And that was designed to pay for the health service and for your pension. And it would seem to me that if the system had kept in pace with itself, that those contributions would have gone up and that the service would have been fully funded. I accept the fact that things need to change. It's like Europe, things need to change. And in that sense, it's a work in progress. But the funding should be there by us for us.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure why successive governments haven't done that.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, it's a whole other issue.
But people are prepared to pay for private medical cover. If they were paying a bit more in their national insurance payments, then they wouldn't need to pay for the private insurance cover.
That's a very good point, Sean. Mm-hmm. I agree with you entirely. In terms of cancer, we got this 8 million global deaths, 4 million of which should have been picked up on, and there are a lot of clever people working in laboratories with test tubes and pipettes and things like that. Apparently, you assume, given our technological prowess, that we're going to crack cancer, aren't we, in the next 20, 30 years.
But then what will happen next? There'll be something else will come along.
For the people that are struggling with it now, whether it be directly or indirectly, what do we want to talk about today?
We're looking at this kind of cancer awareness thing. Well, one of the things, inevitably, when you start talking about cancer, although it isn't the thing that you're most likely to die of, when as soon as someone says the cancer word, and some people have problems with the cancer word, so they say things like big C.
Yeah,
and stuff like that. In some parts of the world, with some types of cancers, up to 50% of people may actually get a cancer in their lifetime. The fact that the majority of people will survive that, we don't hear.
Yeah.
We hear the word cancer and go into some levels of panic. And it's recognised in psychological medicine that when someone gets a cancer diagnosis, they develop a kind of post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm. As a response to that.
What's the actual meaning of the word cancer? Because we can use the word cancer, small c, to describe something or someone being like a cancer.
The way I understand cancer to be is that you've got lots of different body systems. Yeah. So in a particular body system, say your liver, if one of the cells in your liver decides to stop working with the image of the liver that all the other cells are agreeing to and to go off on its own, it starts to reproduce in its own way. It stopped working with the system, so it's become kind of maverick to the system. And then it starts to reproduce and starts to do its own thing, so you get this thing called a tumour. And you get the issues of benign and malignant. You know, benign tumours don't kill you directly. But as they get bigger, they can squash other things like blood vessels, and that can kill it. So benign tumours need to come out. Malignant tumours will actively destroy your system. Yeah. And one of the problems with any tumour that's growing in your body is if it connects to a blood supply, then it goes off like Topsy because it's got lots of nutrients.
And it can spread around.
That's the other thing. If you get metastases, is when those cancer cells that are working maybe in your liver start to spread around your body through the bloodstream and set up home somewhere else.
Yeah.
So someone might end up with breast cancer in their brain, mm-hmm. Or testicular cancer in their lung. Yeah, they've got cancer, but it's a metastasized cancer rather than a primary. It's like it's been shared around the system.
Right.
Yeah. And sometimes you do. I had an Auntie Lil who had. How many primaries did she have? They were all different, something like five primaries, and she died of pneumonia. But she just loved, there was more of her in the incinerator than there was walking around, because they'd taken so many bits out of her. But she was, and in those days, back then, chemo was much more aggressive and violent than it is now. It is more refined.
Yeah.
It's like being hit with a sledgehammer back then.
It's still quite a brutal.
Yeah,
well,
it can be. You know, in all credit to the cancer professionals and the doctors, they have refined things amazing. I mean, the amount of people that don't lose their hair now, that kind of thing, the people that don't end up with yellow eyes. You know, it is much better than it was. Some cancers and some treatments are horrible. They are horrible. And sometimes when I'm working with people, it feels to me like the treatments are worse than the illness. But we are in our cycle where our attitudes towards life and death mean, quite understandably in lots of cases, that people will hang on to life despite the odds and despite the information, and they will go through awful things to get an extra 6 months of life.
Yeah, I mean, neither of us have been hit by it directly yet, have we? So we can't really judge too harshly on people that will take what may seem quite interesting actions, I guess.
But that's one of the roles of psychological medicine. I mean, when people are seeking psychology, psychiatry, counselling, support, whatever, when they are going through disease situations, part of that is them coming to terms with what's happening for them, and part of that may indeed be their decisions about what treatments do I do or don't I do.
Yeah.
And at what point do I say enough's enough kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And those things can be very real in the consulting room.
I mean, my main experience with the big C is that I had a temp job at a local hospital, an oncology hospital. Yeah. That's in fact where I met you, Sean.
You did
way back when, 11, 12 years ago, probably.
Yeah.
I was a medical records clerk, so I was working underneath the secretary, who worked underneath the consultant oncologist. Mm-hmm. So I got to know quite well both the secretary and the consultant. So I was basically manning the phones on the desk for mm-hmm. the patients that were being seen at the time. Mm-hmm. My initial kind of impact was, first of all, how chirpy the people that I spoke to on the phone who were going through the treatment sounded, you know, because I'd have a little chat with them while I was booking in their appointments and stick it in the computer. Mm-hmm. Second of all was when I'd have to go into the medical records library every day, which I don't know what it looks like now, actually, but then it was all paper. So it was a huge room full of shelves that could move back and forward with everyone's case notes, and I'd have to go in each morning and get the 8 or 9 set of case notes out for the consultant that was going to see these people each day. So it was just kind of quite a pow hiss of all of these people that will live within a certain radius of where we live that have had or have cancer. Like, blimey.
Was that a shock?
It was a little bit of a shock, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
But hopefully within the modern statistics, 50% of all those people actually survived it.
Yeah.
You know. One of the tough things I have to deal with is people who know situations. So that if there's a genetic issue, and since we've done the genome work and we're understanding genetics in a greater way, we look at some people in our current levels of understanding as inevitably having... they're going to get cancer. You know, we can't stop it happening.
Yep.
So the classic is the BRCA genes when you've got breast cancer, and you'll get people who, when every female in their family has died or is dying of breast cancer, and the consultant turns around and says, look, I need to give you a double mastectomy now while you're healthy.
Yep.
So that you don't have to do this. And that's a hell of a decision to make, especially for younger women, you know, in their 20s or whatever, you know, in new relationships, marriages, whatever. And you have to have good relationship, good people around you, good support to survive that kind of stuff. So it can be very, very tough, that kind of thing. Yeah.
I want to bring in the whole kind of mindfulness aspect of things now, because, I mean, a lot you do hear these horror stories of cancers, horrendous cancers that hit people for no reason, lived super healthy lifestyles, and then you said before we came on about how you dealt with a young person, like a kid 5-6 who developed lung cancer.
Yeah.
Parents didn't smoke. Yeah. Obviously super healthy, running around, little kid out of the blue, horrendous. But a lot of cancers are preventable in the sense that they're kind of linked to
I think that
a lifestyle.
If we're honest about our understanding of cancer, we're getting better, but we're not there yet. So for me, I would identify 3 causes that we could consider. One would be a genetic cause, which is, okay, it's in the family, you've got a huge predisposition and a likelihood to get whatever it is, whether that's testicular cancer or lung cancer or breast cancer, whatever.
Yeah.
There's the issue of lifestyle, and... we need to look at that a bit. But also there's an issue of personality, and this becomes controversial. I know because of what I do over the last 30 years, as I've spoken to different people working in psychological medicine, that people talk about personality types. There's a certain kind of personality that gets breast cancer or gets lung cancer or gets bowel cancer, and they're different kinds of people. Mm. And because we have different... organ systems in our body, we also have different psychological systems within us. So that someone may have, big breasts physically, but they may have big psychological parts as well, and maybe they're not as visible. Do you know what I mean? So our bodies are dominated, but our psychology is dominated as well. So some people are angry, sad, happy, whatever.
Yep.
Yeah. Some people are naturally athletic. Mm-hmm. And some people are lazy and tubs of lard, you know.
Yeah.
And we're talking about psychology and personality. And one of the things, a predominant thing that I would say when I'm working with people that have cancer, not everybody, but a theme that I've seen a lot of times is when somebody is saying to me that they feel like they are the bottom of the pile. They feel that they are worthless. They feel that their life has no meaning, that kind of thing.
Yep.
Yeah, now, whether this is where we get into the areas of kind of conflict and what we're talking about, is whether those feelings come from the fact that the person has developed cancer or whether the person has developed cancer because they have those kinds of feelings is the unknown.
Yep.
Right? But if you... I've put a reference up here to Psychology Today, which is looking at what is it? Is there something about personality and personality types which creates either people that are prone to cancer or people that are resistant to cancer?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now, I accept the fact that a lot of people might say, that's rubbish, don't be stupid, you know, it's a disease, it's something that's done to you. I suppose there's two ways of looking at it for me. It would seem that people that have a positive demeanour about being alive have a positive body chemistry and have a positive immune system, and they're more likely to survive things and less likely to get things, whatever those things are. Yeah.
Yep.
One of the things about being mindful and living in the positive and living in the now and living with an attitude of gratitude, even if you are dying of cancer, it improves the experience. It's a bit like, you know, we talk about the Paralympics. You know, someone blows your legs off, what do you do?
Yep.
Do you do it positively or negatively?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's the choice that we have. And continually we have choice. I tell you someone who we should get on the podcast for a laugh is Aunt TV. Aunt TV will be 90 shortly. And she is the most positive person I have ever come across. She is amazing. She's got more energy than teenagers.
Cool.
You know, you can't keep her down. She's a bouncer. She's off. She's like Tigger. And, and she's off doing stuff every day. And her attitude is, I'm going to die, but I'm going to live every day. I'm going to get everything I can out of every day until I die.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of cancer research UK links I'll put in the show notes, one of which is the cancer controversies bit about kind of what to be wary of when you're getting advice about cancer.
Yeah.
And within that section is kind of the usual stuff about mobile phones and Wi-Fi and that kind of, even drinking out of plastic bottles,
yep,
which is kind of these myths. There's a stress section saying that, you know, can stress cause cancer? And it does, in there it says that stress is, that multiple studies prove it's inconclusive, basically. But even within that, it does say, it has the caveat saying, so while stress may not directly cause cancer, it can lead to other lifestyle decisions such as smoking, drinking heavily. So even the cancer research kind of admit that, or does say that, you know, while stress may not scientifically be linked to it,
I could give you a whole load of research papers that say the opposite. this is the problem in the controversy. I think that the issue is that our bodies are affected by chemistry. Now, that means what we eat, it means what we drink,
yep,
what we ingest, by the chemicals around us, you know, by traffic fumes, but also we're influenced by the chemistry that we produce within our bodies. All you've got to do is talk to any woman that's going through menopause, and she will tell you how the chemicals going through her body are creating a difference in the way that she feels and the way that her body functions.
Yep.
You know, and when your body is full of those heavy chemicals that the body is producing in menopause, the liver works overtime to get rid of them, and then you get the sweats. Yeah, and it's that those chemicals do not come from the outside; they're produced from within.
So, we talked before we got on came on air about the kind of east-west way of dealing with body and mind.
Yeah, it's not separating the two.
So go on, yeah, talk a bit about that.
Well, no, well, we do here, don't we? We separate mind and body, right? We know, if we went to a comedy show and we took everybody's blood before they went in and then we took their blood when they came out, that the happy hormones, the positive hormones in their system would spike right up. When they come up, they're flying, they're laughing, they're happy, the world's changed, their whole body chemistry has changed, right? We also know that if we took people's bloods and then put them through the most horrendous experience and then took their bloods, that the level of stress hormones in their system would have spiked right up. Yeah. Now, those hormones are really powerful chemicals. They're like taking heroin and cocaine. And they affect the way that we feel, but they affect the way our body functions. And most importantly, those chemicals are affecting the way our immune systems work and our ability to fight illness and disease.
Yeah.
That inevitably, the way that we feel affects our body. All you need to do is to get really, really anxious or scared and you've got to go to the loo and have the squirts because your body's dumping stuff, your body's reacting to it.
Yeah.
Yeah? Now, if you were to refine that down, as we managed to do with quantum physics and other ways of looking at things, you can start to see that the effects that we have are at a cellular level.
Mm.
Yeah? No, okay, if we're starting to have effects at cellular levels, the issues about can we create distortions in that and malfunctions in that, it would suggest in the work that's being done that that's what we're going to end up being more certain about. There's a wonderful advert on the telly at the moment where there's a guy with a fag in his mouth, and each time he inhales on the fag, it turns into kind of rotten flesh. Have you seen that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. And it says something like, every 8 times you inhale on a cigarette, you get a mutation in the DNA in one of your cells.
Mm.
Yeah? Well, we've just had research out recently about people living beside roads developing Alzheimer's and dementia.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the further away from the road you get, the less is the effect.
Mm.
And we had that conversation about having diesel cars and, you know, and doctors against diesel, big deal going on. So we know that chemicals affect our body, and we know they affect our body either adversely or positively if we're taking the right supplements and health things. You know, although a lot of those may be nonsense and a good advertising match. But that doesn't take away the fact that because our personalities affect our brain chemistry or the way that we choose to think, because mindfully on the courses we're all talking about thoughts become things. We have choices here. Yeah, and the choice is moment by moment. If something happens and I choose to feed the anger in it and I feed to get really uptight, I'm going to increase my blood pressure. I'm going to increase the adrenaline cortisol, which eventually hardens my arteries, makes me more likely to have a stroke and to have a heart attack.
Mm.
Yeah. But if I choose to change my behaviour and not run off with the anger and learn to deal with things differently, I'm going to change the way my body works.
Yeah. We need help with this, don't we, on a global scale? Because, I mean, obviously, what with Trump getting in recently, and the day after, was it, his inauguration, there was the Women's March, millions of people right around the world, not just in Washington and every city in America, were out on the streets. And to be fair, from all the pictures I saw, it was quite a good-hearted, jolly old laugh. But a lot of people, I see it on Twitter, which I can't break my addiction to at the moment.
Does it affect your body chemistry?
Well, yeah, I can feel myself getting quite riled up while I'm reading stuff, you know, and
I'm
thinking, flipping out, what's going on? It's like, it feels as if everything's kind of reaching a bit of a climax at the moment, but without ever getting there, it's just going up. So I can feel, I should actually, because this is monitoring my heart rate the whole time as well, so I could probably monitor my heart rate whilst reading Twitter. That'd be quite interesting, isn't it? And how it affects it. But even things like I feel myself getting my heart rate building when you get in the car in the morning and you have to whack the fan on full blast to kind of clear the screen or warm the car up. Even having the fan on loud, I think, and like the on the cooker, you know, on the hood.
Mm-hmm.
When that's on full blast, it kind of I can feel myself getting stressed, and I switch it off.
Yeah, right.
So the study's being done by saying the amount of traffic around at the moment, obviously it's got its health impacts in terms of air quality, but also in terms of that just gentle hum of engines and cars going past all the time spikes people's blood pressure and heart rate. So that being done on a national, international level, can't be too cool.
If you can step outside of that. When I was having my jaw done on Monday, so Nigel's drilling down to Australia and trying to get in there to get the roots out, when we'd finished, he said to me, "Thank you for being so calm." And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, other people would have been jumping around the table doing that."
Yeah.
And I said, "I was just meditating." And one of the things about going there to do it, when I was going there, I went on my own to do it, and everybody was saying, you can't go on, you need to have someone with you. And I'm saying, no, you're going to have to cancel patients. You go and see your patients, I'll do this. And I was okay driving there, hour and a half to get there. I was okay having the procedure. I was okay driving back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's because of, over the years, I've learned to just meditate and focus and let the stress go. Yeah, now, I'm sure that if someone wanted to saw my leg off, I wouldn't be going, I'm just meditating here. So, I mean, there's obviously limits to what we're doing here. But what I'm saying is that you don't have to go with the anxiety, the anger, the emotion.
Yeah.
You can it's become, which is the mindfulness stuff. Now, I'm not saying, because I don't know, that by being mindful and being relaxed and cool, man, that you could cure your cancer. Mm. I do know that if you are relaxed and calm, whatever process and whatever situation you have to go through will be so much easier.
Yeah.
I know that. And I suspect from everything that I understand from the Eastern approach and from my understanding of quantum work here, that if your system is calmer and your immune system is stronger, you're more likely to be able to fight and resist things.
I think most doctors would back you up on that.
Yeah.
Scientific professionals. Not that you're not one. Obviously, you are a professional. Doctor, it says it on your number plate.
It does. It must be true.
Yeah, I'm just looking at my heart rate. So currently it's 85, which is my resting heart rate is kind of low 70s usually. It gets down to in the night kind of high 40s when I'm asleep.
And then that's interesting. When I was running, I've run for a year, but when I was running, my resting heart rate was 55 standard. Get down to.
Right, blimey, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
Well, good. It's low.
Yeah.
But yeah, it gives you a chart each day and it puts into your phone. So low 46 yesterday, that was when I was asleep, and high was 166. That's obviously when I was cycling home or to work.
It's good in the day to get your heart rate up.
Yeah.
Exercise the muscle of your heart.
Well, I've found since Christmas when I got this watch that I was off my bike for a couple of weeks and my resting heart rate was higher, and then as soon as I got back on the bike in a couple of weeks of getting in the routine of cycling to work, my resting heart rate has come down quite a bit.
The thing that I learned from Conrad when we were running together was that if you look at your heart rate...
I've just got to stand up. My watch has told me to stand up.
It's the... don't you want to do? It's how quickly your heart comes back from its spike down to normal.
Yeah,
And that's your cardiovascular health.
Right, okay.
How quickly it comes back down. But I think our emotional health is that when we spike emotionally, whether it's anger or stress or whatever, how quickly do we come back down again?
I bet they follow a similar chart, wouldn't they?
Yeah, but those things, whether we're talking about heart rate, whether we're talking about emotions, are affecting our body system. Mm. Chemically, tension, energy, it's all in there. And those things are going to affect our body.
Yep.
So the issue about, yes, lifestyle is important. The issue about should we be eating certain foods is probably very real. One of the problems is people rush out to eat the vegetables and then find they've been sprayed with insecticide, so they're eating the insecticide, so you need to wash them, all that kind of stuff. You know? But those are real. If you look at the personality types, just as a general rule, and this is in Psychology Today, professional mag, they're looking at this whole issue, and so there's a link there for it, is the cancer-prone personality types will be people who repress their emotions, both positive and negative emotions. They're not showing emotion. They're holding in and trying to be sensible. Yeah?
Yep.
But also people that show high levels of anger, resentment and hostility to others. Yeah. People that take duties and responsibilities really, really seriously, so they cause themselves stress. And people that react adversely and don't react well to life's changes. Pessimistic people, feelings of depression and hopelessness, worries and anxieties, and the feeling of needing approval by others. Those are kind of the cancer-prone personalities. And the opposite are the cancer-resistant personalities, which are the people that express emotions positively in a constructive way, that they control their anger and resolve their anger, and they know when to say no, sod off, leave me alone. People that cope well with stress, optimism, people that don't become easily depressed, people that maintain social networks and talk to people, people that don't worry, and people that don't need to seek approval from other people. I mean, so those are two kinds of opposites of people. Now, for me, that second lot, the cancer-resistant lot, describes a lot of what I would see in mindfulness. It's like positive self-esteem.
Big time.
Yeah, being able to stand up for yourself, being assertive, not being trampled on, all that kind of stuff, being aware, being awake, having a good time, waking up with a smile on your face.
Yep.
Yeah. And Auntie V, who I think we should get on here, is a living example of that.
Get her on here. Case study. Yeah, she can tell us how it's done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love it. Okay, cool. Should we wrap it up? Have you got any resource of the week?
I've got the Cancer Survivor's Companion.
Cool.
Practical ways to cope with your feelings after cancer.
Okay.
And I think that's the biggie, is that hopefully if you do get a cancer diagnosis around you, there will be people like Ree who are psychological support.
Yeah, help me through the other side.
Yeah, but most importantly is, and this again, controversial thing to say, it's easy for me to say it sat here now, is we're all going to die. We are all going to die. And there's going to come a point where you'll be sat here on your own going, well, he's not here anymore.
Oh,
what are we going to do now? and when that happens, it will be a case of I died of something. I didn't sort of ascend to heaven. You know, there was no magical end of my life. It's like my heart stopped, my brain blew. Whatever it is that stops this body working.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
There should be, you should have 20, 30 years you've got left in you, shouldn't you? Sure?
I suppose probably 50, left. I reckon.
So by then, I'm thinking artificial intelligence, there'll be some kind of digital version of you.
What you could have is you could have my brain in a dish.
Yeah.
Connected to...
Do you know what could happen by then, technology-wise, if we don't blow ourselves up? You could have a digital version of you, which people could download as an app. So people won't listen to this podcast. There'll be digital you and digital me. And people will just, rather than listen to a podcast, they'll just talk to me and you.
Yeah.
Through their whatever device is big, through their glasses or whatever. And they'll just chat to us through the day.
And then they'll get locked up.
And we'll be charging $2.99 a pump. We'll be millionaires.
But we'll be dead.
Yeah. But we'll live on, hopefully.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. My resource is a film I watched this week called The Minimalists. It's on Netflix. I'll put the website link so you can get the trailer. If you're not a Netflix subscriber, you can probably find it somewhere online. About these couple of guys who basically, it's interesting because I've been ignoring it on Netflix because I thought it was about kind of a architectural type. You know how we've discovered about hygge, this Danish thing, and about how I thought it was to do with how you arrange things in your house. So I was thinking it was about having not much furniture in, but it turns out this movie is about a whole way of living, which is very similar to what we've discussed in hygge and all that, and just kind of decluttering your life emotionally and in terms of the amount of stuff you buy.
Yep.
Really cool
film. I like that whole idea of minimalism.
Yeah, so check it out, The Minimalists. A couple of youngish guys, early mid-30s, my age, dead young. kind of touring, just on their telling their tale, and they're touring actually the US promoting the book, which I was actually thinking, me and you should do that. We should go on like an adventure in the world doing podcasting as we go along.
I think that'd be really good.
Do you think we get permission from our wives?
Would you have to walk the end of the Amazon or something?
Yeah, it'd be cool, wouldn't it? Anyway, check it out. It's really
they'd be glad to get rid of us.
Yeah, for a year. Get rid of that. Great film. Right, livethepresent.co.uk is our website. Check it out for all the show notes and links. Check out 123 Friday if you want to support the show and get a really good product to back up all the photos and videos on your phone as well. Really recommend you do that. follow us on Facebook, Twitter and Instagram as well for a little nuggets of wisdom and links to the latest episode, yada yada yada.
Sounds amazing.
Brilliant, innit?
Brilliant, absolutely brilliant.
Right, okay, sure. I'll see you next week.
See ya. You take care.
Take care, everyone.
Bye.